Mr. Khan creates a twisted and false moral equivalence between the leaders of Israel and the henchmen of Hamas. This is like creating a moral equivalence after September 11th between President Bush and Osama bin Laden.
All right, that was the voice of Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's talking about the International Criminal Court expressing an interest in arresting him. And again, as he said, making the moral equivalence between Gaza and Israel. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. We're going to talk today about, for the most part, the Christian view of Israel. Should Christians support Israel? I mean, we're seeing all of these stories every night. We're hearing it on the radio about how much suffering there is in Gaza and how it can't continue. Our own administration is telling us how horrible it is. They're pressuring the Israelis to actually supply the Gazans with so-called humanitarian relief. They're pressuring them to cease fire. They're pressuring them to leave the Gaza Strip. And they tell us constantly how horrible it is, what's happening to the Gazan people. But what is the reality here? And if the Gazan people are being treated so badly, then how can we as Christians support the Israelis who are perpetrating this violence on the Gazans? How are we to think about this? Should Christians support Israel? That's our topic today. Dr. Jeff Myers of Summit Ministries will be joining us, and it will be very, very informative. I promise you, just take out a pencil and paper and be prepared for some great information on this really timely topic. Kamala Harris shouts all the time about the right to abortion. Do you think she ever takes a minute to think about what does God think? Does Kamala think about God? Do these leftists think about God? Do they ever think about that? Do they ever think about how God feels about their love for this, their bloodlust, really it is, for the death of babies, that's more important than anything else in their universe? I don't know. I think human sacrifice, of course, has been around since the beginning of time. The god of Moloch was an ancient Canaanite god associated with the sacrifice of children. And there were so many more. So the next question is, I think, is we need to take a moment to think about what God really does think. It didn't go well for civilizations who sacrificed their children. And it won't go well with us if we don't stop this. Preborn is leading the charge in this nation, rescuing babies from this horrific practice. Every day, their network of clinics sees 200 babies saved and given life. Once a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears that heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. So it's just $28 for one ultrasound. So I'm encouraging you to go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. And you know that you can call us. You do know this, right? Do you write this? You should write this number down so that when you hear something and you want to comment, you can call. You put it on speed dial on your phone. Is there speed dial? I don't know. Put it in your contacts. It's 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can go on any podcast platform to listen to Sandy Rios 24/7. AFR, AmericanFamilyRadio.net is our home base. If you go to my website, sandyrios.com, you can also listen, and that's pretty easy. You can go to any social media platform, and there we are too. So today we're going to be talking about why you should care about Israel. We're going to be talking about the history in Gaza, Israel, and the battle of worldviews, the propaganda that's at work in this kind of conflict. All of that and a whole lot more with Dr. Jeff Myers on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
The world's top war crimes court is seeking arrest warrants for leaders of Israel and Hamas, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
They're all being accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip and Israel. Fox 5's Chris Welch has more, including the strong reaction from President Biden, who says there's no equivalence between Israel and Hamas.
This is how we will prove tangibly, in real terms, for all victims, that the lives of all human beings, wherever they may be, have equal value.
The International Criminal Court's chief war crimes prosecutor, Karim Khan, is seeking arrest warrants for the leaders of Israel and Hamas for their actions taken over the war in Gaza.
Starvation of civilians as a method of warfare, taking of hostages as a war crime, rape, and other acts of sexual violence during captivity.
Khan says the decision is based on interviews with survivors, eyewitnesses, and experts. A panel of three judges will now determine whether to actually issue arrest warrants for these alleged crimes.
Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, since October the 7th, a lot of us call it the October 7th massacre, and that was the incident at the concert in close to Gaza, when the Gazans came in like with these aerial little individually controlled little vehicles from the sky. You could see them in a distance, and they came in and slaughtered, brutally murdered, raped, dismembered, cut babies out of mothers' wombs, did so much violence to the people of Israel living in that area and those at the concert. And that's how this current dispute has started. And so what's come from that is, of course, we see all these demonstrations on college campuses. We see violence in our capital. And we see from the church in general, not much response. I have to say, there was a demonstration in Washington, D.C., right across from the White House just this week. And a lot of my Jewish friends were there. They were encouraging attendance. I didn't see any, well, I don't know that they could have been there, but I saw no mention of pastors, Christians being there. I just didn't see that. Why is this? Why is this? Christians know through their Bible that there's such a strong link to the Jewish people and the state of Israel. So along across my desk came this brand new book, just out. And it grabbed my attention, and I thought, we have to talk about this because the church, for the most part, is asleep on the issue of Israel and confused, should I say. The title is called, Should Christians Support Israel? Simple as that. Should Christians support Israel? And the subtitle is, Seeking a Biblical Worldview in an Impossible Situation. The author is my guest, Dr. Jeff Myers. He's the president of Summit Ministries. If you don't know about Summit, they equip the rising generation to understand and live out their Christian convictions in today's culture. They help young Christians and those who work with them engage in today's tough issues such as abortions, transgenderism, relativism, competing worldviews, critical theory, justice, and other cultural ideas influencing the next generation. And so, Dr. Jeff Myers, thanks for joining us today.
Sandy, I'm really glad to be with you, and I'm sorry it's such a somber topic that we have to address. But if Christians can't engage on the toughest issues of our day, then what's the point of engaging at all?
Well, I agree, and I think that's what's missing. There's just, you know, I heard a pastor at a conference probably a year ago, and he preached a sermon on cowardice. And he mentioned that in one of the passages that talks about the end times, when it lists all the kinds of people that will not be in heaven, or will not make paradise, whatever the list is, liars, adulterers, you know, homosexuals, whatever. In the middle of that is cowards. Cowards,
right,
in this
Revelation
particular
21. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he preached a whole message on that. And you know what, Dr. Jeff, I think we have become a church of cowards. Pastors, too, and of course there are exceptions. We're going to talk, though, I think this is true of most pastors right now in terms of engaging the culture. Do you agree with that, or is that too harsh?
Well, I think sometimes you have to be very forthright about it. Pastors, I understand, are in a difficult situation. 8 out of 10 people in the pew do not have a biblical worldview. So they, it's not like pastors have an easy job to begin with. Now, pastors then, on top of that, 95% say they believe that the Bible speaks to today's issues. Well, George Barna, the pollster, you know him, he actually called their bluff. He said, okay, well, here's a list of today's top issues. Which of these have you addressed from the pulpit? It went from 95% down to 9%. Mm-hmm. And if you ask pastors, why aren't you doing it? They say, because I'll be perceived as political, and I don't want to do that. You know, and I think that's actually fair for pastors to say that, because if you only preach on current issues during political elections and you don't build a foundation based on a biblical worldview for the rest of the time, I think you're doing a disservice, and you are making it tougher on yourself. So I feel bad for pastors in a way, but this is not a time to say, oh, well, we want unity in our church, so we don't bring up anything tough. We don't think of unity in any other area of our lives that way. You know, in my marriage, I want unity, but it's not easy. We have to fight for it. We have to work for it. Why do we think that in church we can only have unity by not talking about anything tough?
Well, I think also just the lack of understanding. I understand that it's not easy to do this, but, you know, God is in everything. You know, it's in Him that we live and move and have our being, and it's in our real life. It's with our neighbors. It's in our politics. It's seamless that God is in this world, and our faith applies to every single thing, every single thing. What we listen to on the radio, what we watch on television, how we vote, how we see these issues, I just don't see it as separate, and that's the problem. You know, a long time ago, many Christian leaders labeled this political. This is all political. And how unfortunate for us, Dr. Jeff, that they would dismiss discussions of abortion and homosexuality and gay marriage and all of that and call it political and use it as an excuse to not talk about it. I think that's the foundation of how we got here. But let me ask you something.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, okay, I want to ask you about your subtitle. So the title is, Should Christians Support Israel? Should Christians support Israel? Seeking a biblical worldview in an impossible situation. Okay, so what do you mean by that? The subtitle.
Well, I mean by a biblical worldview that we have to think through that what role Israel, modern Israel, has in God's plan that He's been implementing all throughout time. And then we also have to understand the role of the Jewish people. We have to understand the nature of evil. This Hamas group that attacked Israel is an apocalyptic rape and death cult. We have to understand something about just war and whether these charges of genocide have any merit. All of these kinds of things relate to thinking biblically about a very difficult subject. And I'm especially focused on the rising generation among Gen Z. Up to 60% have said they know that Hamas is a terrorist group that targets innocent men, women, and children, and they still think those attacks were justified because Hamas represents the Palestinians. They are oppressed, and Israel is an oppressor state.
Well, we'll get to that, hopefully, about the whole business of propaganda. But I want to ask you this. Let's go about this a little different way. What is the case, as you talk to Christians, and you've thought this through because this is your business, and I thought it through because this is my business too in a different way, but what is the case that Christians, people who call themselves Christians, generally church-going people, but different denominations, what is the case for not supporting Israel? What do they say is the reason why they don't support Israel?
Well, the main two arguments that I hear, first, that people will argue, and some people believe this theologically, that when Christ came, the Jews lost their opportunity to be God's people. It's a doctrine, they're called supersessionism. There's a hard supersessionism and a soft supersessionism, and we don't have to get into all of the theology. But there are a lot of people who believe that Jews are irrelevant to God's plan because Jesus came. The second reason people would say we don't support Israel might be geopolitical. They just look at the Palestinian cause. They say Palestinians are beleaguered and the state of Israel violates their human rights. It's a white settler colonialist state, and we should not think of them as any more special than any other nation in the world. Those are the two dominant arguments.
Well, of course, it seems to me the first might be argued as scriptural, although I think both of us agree that it's not scriptural, that the promises to Israel and to the Jewish people are eternal promises. God doesn't break his promises, he doesn't change his mind, but some people see it that way because we are grafted in to the tree. We are not the roots, and that's pretty clear too. However, that's that camp. The other camp is like it's like culture is overriding their the Bible is not overriding culture. Culture is overriding biblical teaching. I guess that's the way you would put that. So
I think so. Yes.
But now on the other flip side, this is something that's concerned me before too. How do you think some Christians who wholeheartedly support Israel, no matter what they do, do you think there's kind of a twist there that goes a little too far?
It can. We've got to remember that the nation of Israel is run by human beings. They don't always agree with themselves on different things. In the United States, we think that we're politically fractured because we have two dominant political parties that fight with each other. In Israel, and this is with only 9 million people, there are 55 political parties, and 15 of them have seats in the Knesset. So Israelis themselves debate over all of these issues. I don't think it's anti-Semitic to say Israel has taken this action, this particular action, and I don't support it. It becomes anti-Semitic when you say things like Israel has taken this action and that action, their government, their nation, their state is illegitimate, and the Palestinian idea that it should be annihilated off the face of the earth is a legitimate point of view. And that's where people start to spiral down into incoherence. They begin to believe false propaganda, and they allow evil to thrive.
You start your book in such a compelling way. Chapter one, if you would indulge me to read just a little bit of what you wrote, to give people an idea of the way you wrote this. Again, the book is called Should Christians Support Israel? But this is The Gates of Gaza, that's chapter one, and it's the subtitle here is 1150 BCE, date unknown, midnight. Samson rose from the bed of the Gazan prostitute who had entertained him the night before. He needed to leave now before the Gazans sprang their trap. In a fury, Samson ripped out the city gates and gateposts, hoisted them on his shoulders, and carried them to a hill overlooking Hebron, 36 miles away. Hebron is the final resting place of Judaism's founder, Abraham. It was settled by Caleb, who earned his place in the land by defeating the vaunted giants whose presence terrified the Israelites into forfeiting the territory God had promised. By carrying the heavy gates of Gaza to Hebron, Samson symbolically stripped away the defenses of Israel's tormentors, delivering his enemies to the bosom of Abraham. It was a grunting and violent act of prophecy, a superhuman feat in which a degenerate patriarch, that's Samson, symbolically offered up his enemies at the grave of a redeemed patriarch, that's Abraham, the one whose willingness to sacrifice his own son foreshadowed the coming of the Messiah. 100 years later, Samson's prophecy came true when a shepherd boy named David defeated the giant Goliath, leading to a rout of the Philistine army of Gaza. Okay, so Dr. Jeff, you trace Gaza. I think that's a wonderful way to begin because people don't even, we have the modern name Gaza. How far back does that term go? Is it in the Bible? I don't even know.
Yeah, the term Gaza is in the Bible. Yes, so Samson went to Gaza. Goliath was from Gaza. The Gazans were a group of people called the Philistines. Interestingly enough, they're not the same people group as today's Palestinians, but the word for Palestinian in Arabic is Philistine. So they're claiming a tradition that's not really theirs, but it's still the center of conflict. And there's something, I think it's an interesting detail about the nation of Israel. You go all the way back to 1956, there was a young man named Roy Rotberg who lived in a kibbutz called Nahal Oz, and he was killed by some Arab raiders. They mutilated his body. And the next day, they held a funeral service for him, and speaking at the funeral was a guy named Moshe Dayan. You probably remember seeing pictures of him, the guy with the eye patch who was a military leader back in the 1970s. So Moshe Dayan gave the eulogy for Roy Rotberg, and it has the same level of significance to Israelis today as the Gettysburg Address does to Americans. And in the speech, as he was memorializing Roy, he said, but beyond that furrow that marks the border lies a surging sea of hatred and vengeance, yearning for the day that tranquility blunts our alertness, for the day that we heed the ambassadors of conspiring hypocrisy who call for us to lay down our arms. And he went on to say, Roy Rotberg, the light in his eyes, blinded him to the flash of the blade. The gates of Gaza were too heavy for him, and they crushed him. Only by understanding biblical history can we understand the conflict that is taking place in Gaza at the present time.
One thing, I was following along with you. And there was one sentence that I know you're trying to get a faster read, but I think this is so important because you say in your narrative here that Roy was an idealist. He wanted to think the best about the Gazans or, you know, the enemies of Israel. So the phrase is from Diane, Moshe Diane, the light in his heart, meaning Roy, blinded his eyes and he saw not the flash of the blade. That is so poetic, but honestly, Dr. Jeff, that really does, as you are saying, describe what's happening here. There are so many Jews in Israel who fancied they could have a two-state solution or they could get along with their, especially Gaza neighbors. Now, they did for generations get along with their Arab neighbors, but the Gazans are a different breed. How would you distinguish, one more time, how would you distinguish the Gazans from just the Arabs who used to at least live in Israel aside the Israelis?
Well, it's a really important question. So Israel has about 9 million citizens. About 2 million of the citizens are Israeli Arabs. 7 million are Israeli Jews. But inside the borders of what had in the past constituted modern Israel are these two Palestinian territories, the West Bank, which refers to the West Bank of the Jordan River, and then Gaza, which is along the Mediterranean Sea. So when you hear people chant, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, what they mean is what's in between the river and the sea is Israel. They mean annihilating the state of Israel and turning everything over to the Palestinian people. The Palestinians are Arabs. Virtually all of them are Muslim, like 99.9% of them are Muslim. They're a kind of Muslim called Sunni Muslim. And the Gazans have been in this one little area. They have been a thorn in the side of every nation in that entire region. They were invited at one point to come to Syria. They sparked a civil war, and 1.5 million people died. No other nation wants the Palestinians there. They've had four opportunities in history, 1948, 1967, 2000, and 2008, to form their own nation, and they refused to do it because they don't want two nations. They want the elimination of the state of Israel. That's all they care about. So it's really important to understand that what we're seeing today with Hamas, this is a paradigm shift. This is not your parents' Israel-Palestine conflict. If you don't understand the nature of Islam, especially Islamism, the more brutal form of Islam, if you don't understand that and you don't understand what Hamas is all about, you know, and I actually in the book, I have 200-some footnotes. I document all of this, just even reading the Hamas charter. What do they say they want? How are they going about achieving their goals? What have they actually done? It is a constant threat to the state of Israel. They desire to kill all Jews, and they have said so explicitly, and they believe that that command comes to them from the Quran. They're never going to give up on it. They have said, we will do the October 7th attack 10,000 times if we have to.
Oh, they've been shouting it in college campuses. It'll be October 7th every day for the Jews. They have a chant. I mean, it's really stunning to me, Dr. Jeff. It's so dangerous. And I've said often, you know, how is it that these college campuses, you know, 6 months ago were telling us about safe zones, free speech zones, where a little area where people could go 200 yards from campus or half a mile and say whatever they liked, or that speech is violence and pronouns are violence. And now they're allowing pro-Palestinian protesters to shout at Jewish students, we want every day to be October 7th for you. That's kind of the idea of what's happening. Let's talk about propaganda, because you do talk about that. And I want to play Well, let's just ask, let me ask you this. What role is propaganda playing in the confusion on this issue, you think?
Well, there's a difference between persuasion and propaganda. My young students get very cynical about this. They say, well, one person's persuasion is another person's propaganda. It's not true. Persuasion is when you use arguments to move people toward the truth. Propaganda is when you use arguments to reinforce your power and move them toward yourself. Hamas is using propaganda. They have from the very beginning. The propaganda war began on the same day as the October 7th attack. The groups you've been mentioning on campus, the main group sponsoring these protests is called Students for Justice in Palestine. They are funded by groups that are related to and supportive of Hamas. So this is not just a general Palestinian protest. This is a very specific kind of protest designed to keep Hamas in power so that Israel can ultimately be annihilated. But yes, of course, like you mentioned, it's a double standard. I sometimes think, and maybe this is a cynical thought, but, you know, the progressive left, if they didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. But that is honestly where we are right now. And I document all of this in the book. I show how the propaganda war began on October 7th. And, Sandy, the churches are in some ways complicit in this. There's a group called Churches for Middle East Peace that's funded by some of the largest denominations in the United States of America that began assisting Hamas in its propaganda campaign on October 8th, one day after the attacks.
I know about these types. I didn't know the names of them, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And so at a lot of churches, you know, even the thing that really stresses me, many of the mainline denominations got off the reservation many, many years ago. But in evangelical churches, there is this now, this poison of this, it's sort of that teasing, or it's various iterations of the first reason that you gave that people say they don't support Israel, that the promises left when the Jews rejected Jesus. So there's shades of that. It's being taught in seminaries, and that's what really upsets me the most. And so the news media is not helping. I think it would be safe to say that the Muslim Brotherhood, the Sunni Muslims, those that are here and around the globe are experts of propaganda. This is not new to them. And I want to give an example of how the news media helps them propagandize. This is a CBS News report about what's going on in Gaza. This is clip one. Let's listen.
One final agonizing kiss goodbye for a small child wrapped in a blood-stained shroud for burial. Just one of 27 Palestinians killed across Gaza today in multiple Israeli strikes. Most were killed overnight in Nusayriya in central Gaza. Yad Harara had to dig survivors from the rubble following the Israeli strike with his bare hands. Their message to us is clear, he says. Just look around you. In the southern city of Rafah, Israel's so-called limited operation there is only widening. The violence has triggered a mass exodus of civilians, including 84-year-old Huria Al-Ghul. It's a displacement which echoes her family's expulsion from the now Israeli city of Ashkelon to Gaza 76 years ago when Israel was founded. Known to Palestinians as the Nakba, or catastrophe, Al-Ghul remembers it vividly. She was just 8 years old at the time and has now lost her home once again. My house was destroyed, and now we live in a tent on the dirt, she says. It's a miserable life. It's a misery that also left her great-granddaughter permanently scarred. Judy was badly injured in an Israeli airstrike that killed 35 people. We cry for them every day, she says. In all, Huria and Judy have lost 17 members of their family over the past 7 months.
And in the days since Israel launched its counteroffensive in Rafah, over 800,000 Palestinians who were already displaced have now been forced to flee again, says the UN, Nancy, making the already dire humanitarian situation in Gaza
that much worse.
All right, that was CBS. Now, Dr. Jeff Myers, the book, by the way, is called Should Christians Support Israel? That's CBS, and our friends and neighbors are people that are we're in church with also, but all kinds of people across the country, that's what they're hearing. And they're seeing images along with that. They saw the little girl had all of these spots on her body. How are we supposed to how can people respond to that? What is the way to look at that as a Christian? Doesn't our heart go out to the Gazans, and don't we think they should be rescued or supplies should come in? How do we think clearly about that situation?
We absolutely should feel bad about that. I visited with one of the hostage moms named Rachel Goldberg. And if she said, if you only care when one side's babies die, your moral compass is broken. War is a horrifying situation. It's always horrifying, especially urban warfare. Typically, in an urban warfare situation, 9 civilians die for every 1 combatant who is killed. In this particular war, it's about 1 civilian who's been killed for every combatant who has been killed. So Israel is doing some things that have never been done before to protect civilians. In fact, John Spencer, who's America's leading expert on urban warfare, says, and I quote, "Israel has implemented more precautions to prevent civilian harm than any military in history, above and beyond what international law requires, and more than the United States did in its wars in Iraq and Afghanistan," end quote. But that doesn't mean these lives don't have value. What it means is that we have to ask the question, is this war just? If the war is just, and a just war is defined by 3 things. Is it given by a legitimate authority with a just cause using just means? And just means in part, proportionality. Now, what people do, I think, is they look at and say, well, look, 1,200 Israelis were killed on October 7th. Now, Hamas claims 30-some thousand Gazans have been killed. That's not proportional. They look at that, and that's how they interpret it. But proportionality is not based on the number of people who are killed. It is based on proportionality to the threat. Hamas has constituted a threat, shooting tens of thousands of rockets into Israel, 140 different suicide bombings, plus the attacks on October 7th and others. So it's a horrifying situation in Gaza right now. I've been there. I have seen some collapsed buildings. I've been to the war zone. I've talked with the IDF soldiers. And their entire focus is, we have very strict rules of engagement. We know somebody is a terrorist when they shoot at us, and then we shoot to kill them. But civilians get caught up in the middle of it. The whole idea of just war from a biblical perspective goes all the way back to Christian thinkers like Augustine and Aquinas. And interestingly, they didn't actually say that death is the worst thing that happens in war. I said the worst thing that can happen in war is that evil will prevail and that people will not be able to live out their God-given design. What I'm finding, and this is true in a lot of key areas among Israeli Arabs and also among Palestinians, that they want Hamas to be destroyed. They know it's going to be difficult because they know that Hamas shields itself behind civilians. They know that Hamas intentionally kills civilians who refuse to be human shields. They know that Hamas has been starving and killing people in Gaza for decades, while its leaders have become billionaires taking away aid that was designed for the Gazans. But there's so much more we could say. The comment that CBS News made that people aren't getting enough food is just a lie. It isn't true. Between October and April, 290,000 tons of food aid was brought into Gaza. That's enough for half the calorie needs of all Gazans during that period of time. And keep in mind, 3/4 of Gaza's agricultural production is still intact because the Israelis don't do burn down everything or target everything. They're specifically focusing on destroying terrorist hideouts and destroying terror tunnels. So if there's not enough food for Gazans, it's because Hamas is stealing it. And literally, Sandy, there are 600 Hamas leaders who have become millionaires, and the top leaders have become billionaires by skimming off of the international aid from people who have compassion for the Gazans. This is what the Israelis are facing right now, and it's very frustrating to them that they just can't seem to get the truth out there when what people are interested in is the propaganda.
I think just to add to what you said, then these billionaires are hanging out in Qatar. You know, they're living high lives in the nation of Qatar. Qatar's been hiding a lot of them, and the thing of it is, I think the thing that's hard for us, Dr. Jeff, is that we assume that we've been taught for a long time, and I believe this, that God, all men are created equal. God created mankind. I've done a lot of traveling, and I've learned to love every people group I've had the privilege of spending time with. There's something wonderful about each and every one of them. But sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that they think about things the way we think about things. And I think that's part of the breakdown here. And you touched on this by explaining that the Gazans don't value life like we do. They do. I think of the Sunni Muslims, broader than that, because they're in the same camp. Remember Osama bin Laden, before he was killed, put his wife between him and the people that were coming after him, our guys. And they put their stuff over in hospitals where people are sick. And then they blame the Israel for bombing hospitals. They don't care about life. I know the mantra for the Muslim Brotherhood is that we love death more than they love life. And I mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood because they are cousins. They may not be Gazans, but they have the same philosophy. But I can you explain for us, Dr. Jeff, just give us the positive. I think this is a view you and I both share, but I'd love to hear from you because you're the theologian. Why should, biblically, why should we support Israel?
I think the case, Sandy, goes back to Genesis chapter 12, where God told Abraham, I will bless you, and through you all nations of the earth will be blessed. That promise was given to Abraham and his entire household, which would have been hundreds of individuals who had, they weren't Jewish at that point, but they were promised by God that they would be a blessing to the nations of the earth. The Apostle Paul in Galatians chapter 3 affirms that, and he says, those who believe, those who are of the faith, meaning faith in Jesus, are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. In other words, God has designed from the beginning through his covenant for the Jewish people to be a blessing to the nations of the earth. And as you mentioned earlier, and this is from Romans chapter 11, that God doesn't go back on his promises. He made a covenant with the children of Israel, and I believe that modern Israel is an inheritor of that promise. It's mostly Jewish people. You can even see things like their flag, which is based on a Jewish prayer shawl. The laws and holidays of Israel are based on the principles of Judaism found in Scripture, and there's an incredible spiritual movement in that nation right now. It's an extraordinary thing, but it has become a blessing to the nations of the earth. It's brought economic prosperity to hundreds of millions of people, and in that entire region, I can tell you right now that the nations surrounding, even if they don't really think a lot of the Jews, are hoping that Israel defeats Hamas, because they know that groups like Hamas represent the true threat. In fact, even in the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority, they're terrified of Hamas because they know that if Israel wasn't going after Hamas, that Hamas would come after the other Palestinians. Khalid Mashal is one of the individuals living in Qatar, a Palestinian leader who's a leader of Hamas. He has a net worth of $5 billion that he skimmed off of international aid coming into Gaza. And he has said in a public interview, well, in Russia, tens of millions of people died in the revolution. In Angola, 6 million people died. In Cambodia, 2.5 million people died. A revolution is not won without deaths. He does not care if every single Gazan is killed, as long as he can achieve his ultimate aim of the annihilation of the state of Israel.
Well, and that's where we are, and that's who we're facing, and that's why the Israelis cannot live beside them. That's why it can't happen, and we've already seen that. You know, I talked to, you don't know, but I talked to Josh Reinstein I don't know if you met Josh. He's the director of the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus in Jerusalem. And he told me basically what you just said, that there is kind of a, I think Josh is very Jewish, so he didn't use this word, but this is my word, a bit of a revival. People are seeing how God is delivering them and their nation and delivering these victories and with so little casualties. And it's just, he said it's just changed everything. The whole mood there is different. Is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about a move toward Jesus? What is your description of that change in spirit there?
Well, I think it's both. I would love for all of my Jewish friends to come to faith in Jesus as the Messiah. And I'm seeing that happen. What we call Messianic Judaism began, I don't know, 60, 70 years ago in Israel with 10 people. And I know some of the people, the family members. Now there are about 30,000 of them. But even in Orthodox Judaism itself, there is a revival toward biblical principles, toward wanting to understand and obey God's word. There's a move away from a purely secular society. And there's a move toward applying biblical principles to things like economics. We're seeing something happen there that hasn't happened before in my lifetime. And I think when you think about Iran's attack on Israel recently, and everybody I've talked to there says this was a miracle. We know that right. God has protected us in this time.
It's thrilling, really. What a time to be alive. What a time to be alive. As scary as it is, it's just amazing to me, Dr. Jeff Myers. And I could talk to you for such a long time, but let me ask you a practical question before we say goodbye here. You in your summit, in the teaching that you do with young people and the people that work with them, you talk about these difficult moral issues. We itemize them, whether it's homosexuality, transgenderism, all of that, the things we've been dealing with as believers in Christ. But how about the view toward Israel? Have you looped that, folded it in your curriculum?
You know, we just started our summer programs, the 11-day programs that we offer at Summit Ministries for young leaders who are coming up and will be the next generation of leaders in this country, like 1,800 of them we trained this summer. We just began those programs on Sunday. And on Thursday of the week that you and I are talking, we're going to begin talking with them. They'll get a copy of the book, the new book, Should Christians Support Israel? And then they'll have a chance to ask all of their questions. They have very good questions and legitimate questions. In fact, I wrote this book for a couple reasons. I wanted to, in 120 pages, give the summary of the issue with all the documentation. And second, I wanted people to know you can understand the truth in a way that enables you to see God's plan for the Jewish people and also be able to talk to people who've been propagandized by Hamas. So that's why we're starting this week. And I've had some pre-discussions with them. I know the questions they're asking, and we address all of those core questions in this book.
All right. So the book now, it comes out just as you're hearing me talk, it's just coming out. The title is Should Christians Support Israel? It's so well written, compelling. It's not like a textbook that you have to make your way through details. It teaches you in the midst of stories. It's the best kind of teaching, I think. And the subtitle is Seeking a Biblical Worldview in an Impossible Situation. Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said people can get it if they go to summit.org/Israel. And
that's the fastest way.
Okay, summit.org/Israel. And you said they can give a gift, but you'll send it for free if they don't choose to give a gift, correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay. And if they want to know more about Summit or sending their kids or youth leaders, go to summit.org. Just summit.org, right?
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Jeff Myers, I wish you all the best. It's exciting to hear that you're teaching this. You've actually encouraged me so, and you've encouraged a lot of the people listening. So thank you very much for all that you do.
Thank you, Sandy. Well, let's spread the word about truth. And I'm so grateful for the show that you have and your knowledge of these issues and being able to share every day with Christians so they can understand the times and know what America ought to do.
Thank you for that. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Some of you are, you know, you have more finances than others. We're not all the same. Some of you are struggling, but others of you still have good resources. And if you have those kinds of resources, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would reach 200 babies and their moms. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
They managed to escape Hamas's terrifying rampage at the Nova Music Festival on October 7th.
Ready?
But they did not survive the day. Hamas terrorists killed Shani Luke, Amit Buskila, and Yitzhak Gelernter 10 miles down the road from the festival, according to the Israeli military. Their bodies taken into Gaza and held hostage.
Last night, the Israel Defense Forces and ISA forces rescued the bodies of our hostages.
The Israeli military now says their bodies are back on Israeli soil, returned to families who have endured more than 7 months of uncertainty and anguish.
Our hearts go out to them, to the families, at this difficult time. We will leave no stone unturned. We will do everything in our power to find our hostages and bring them home.
23-year-old Shani Luke, seen here at the Nova Festival hours before her death. This image of her body being hauled into Gaza, embodying the brutality of Hamas's attack. Her family learned in late October she had been killed.
We cannot do really a real funeral.
Her father now telling Israeli media they can find peace.
This was like a present for Shabbat for us, and now she'll be able to find her place in the cemetery. We can put a bouquet.
For the two other families, a different type of closure. For months, the family of Amit Buskila, a 28-year-old fashion stylist, had no information.
We know nothing about her. Not one person has seen her and is capable of telling us anything about her or any of the others. Really, nothing.
The Israeli military operation also confirming for the first time the death of Yitzhak Gelernter, a 58-year-old father of four and grandfather of two.
All right. Sandy Rios back with you. That was a CNN report. To their credit, they reported recently, this is a recent story, where three of the hostages were discovered by the Israelis. You heard the description. I want to speak to Shani Luke. That was the girl dancing in the video you couldn't see, but I'm sure you've heard of this girl. What they were showing were these Hamas terrorists standing in the bed of a truck, some driving it and others standing on the bed, with her body laid on the back of the truck so that all could see it, her lifeless body. And I saw an interview with her parents just a few days ago, and they were saying that they've recovered the body. They recovered it in one of the tunnels. And the tunnel was so cold that she looked like she was still alive. Her skin was still beautiful. The color was still there, but looking beautiful. And she's been dead for 7 months. Here's the thing, though. The report is that she was beheaded. She was beheaded. These people in Gaza, the Gazans, are terrorists. This is terrorism. This is not funny. It's not something you support. lightly. And when you see the suffering in Gaza, no one's happy about that. But I would tell you, I mentioned in our conversation with Dr. Myers, that the Muslim, I don't know if it's part of Muslim culture, but it's, I know for a fact, because I've seen it over and over again, they have perfected street theater. I saw actually a demonstration or an illustration, a video taken by a camera of five or six Muslim women. Now, this is not necessarily Gaza. I don't know what the crisis was. But they were gathered around a baby who was supposedly injured, and the camera hadn't started rolling, and they were giggling and laughing. And then the camera started to roll, and then, oh, they're crying. And this is the kind of thing they do. It's like a, I think it's like, you know, seeing a beggar on the street, and you don't know whether to give them money or not because they're so convincing. And sometimes they're just playing you. It's a wickedness, but it is rampant in that part of the world. So it's hard to know. There are fake deaths, fake tragedies, and they're not constrained by the truth. Maybe they are constrained by the truth to each other, but taqiyya is a method. It's what the Muslim Brotherhood and Sunni Muslims believe. You can lie to the infidel. The infidel is anyone who's not Muslim. It's okay to lie if it's in the pursuit of domination, which is what they want to do. They want to dominate all of us and rule the world. It's really bizarre. So it's not wrong that our heartstrings are pulled when we see these tragedies, whether they're real or not. There's nothing wrong with that, but you have to keep your mind about it. You've got to put your emotions in check and let your mind work, because remember that war causes death. I think of the bombing of Japan, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. How horrible for the citizens of Japan, how horrible for the children, the wives, and the soldiers, all of them, such devastation. And yet the Japanese were so brutal, so incredibly brutal, rivaling the Gazans in what they did to people, what they did in torture to our men, and they were not going to stop fighting. The Germans had surrendered, but the Japanese were not. There, it was to the death. They had, remember, kamikaze pilots that they would kill themselves and like the Muslim terrorists rather than surrender. It had to be stopped, and so a lot of innocent people were killed in the process. You have to have the large view of what's happening. So I hope you learn something. I would certainly recommend this book. I can't wait. While I'm giving you this, while we're talking, the book is not ready. I have like some papers in front of me, but the book will be ready by the time you hear this show. And you can order it again at summit.org/Israel, summit.org/Israel. And I would encourage you to be very generous to Summit Ministries. They're not asking for money for the book, but based on what he just said to us, don't you think you'd want to support that ministry? You might want to even look into it for your kids and for your youth leader, your pastor. So go to summit.org, and for the book, go to summit.org/Israel. Well, thank you so much for listening to this important edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.